We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate you giving me some of your time. I mean, isn't that the most valuable thing you can give me? Now I get it. We're all multitasking. No one's just sitting in a dark room listening to a podcast. I guess you could be. You could be taking a nap or going to bed or, you know, just, I guess you could be in a dark room listening to a podcast. I'm not judging you. If you are in a dark room listening to my voice, then I'm flattered. And here we are. This episode, of course, is brought to you by Prize Picks. If you don't know what Prize Picks is, real quick, daily fantasy sports, any sport. I know it's not the NFL season. But we got March Madness right now. If you don't think you can do that on Prize Picks, then you're wrong. It's on there. Check it out. PrizePicks.com/gold. Promo code GOLD. And they will match any first deposit up to $100. Again, that's PrizePicks.com/gold. Prize Picks. Rolling with the Striking Gold fam for another year. LFG. Can't believe I just said that, but I did it. Can't take it back. Not editing it out. Sorry. Today, we're going to talk about maybe a little bit on the Brandon Ayuk trade rumors, although I'm in typical Rob fashion, I guess, not getting spin up. Okay, we'll talk about it. And then I figured we would just go through and talk about the expectations that I have for all of the major 49ers free agent signings, what I expect them to do this season. Not necessarily a prediction. I could try to make one on the fly, but really just giving you my expectations for all the players that the 49ers have signed, and more on the major side. You know, the 49ers obviously signed a few guys that you know are expected to basically make a contribution on special teams. That said, I might touch on some of the bigger re-signings just to give you my thoughts briefly. But for the most part, it's aimed at the new free agents that were acquired from other teams. So, let us begin. Brandon Ayuk. Look, you're going to get the same type of approach when it comes to Brandon Ayuk from me that you've gotten around pretty much anything. And that's the fact that I just don't think it's worth getting spun up over. You know, it depends on what your angle is and how you feel about it. Do you think the 49ers should trade Brandon Ayuk? That question would based largely on what the 49ers were able to get from Brandon Ayuk. But look, you can kind of draw yourself some parameters in terms of what a trade would look like. Now, I didn't pull it up. We talked about it already. There was that kind of silly Jaguars Ayuk tweet where something about you know, the 17th overall pick and Zay Jones, and you know, it got weird, you know. And was it a report? Was it not a report? Was it just a scenario? You know, it was just a little weird. But I really do think that that kind of a trade is what you should expect if somebody is going to come after. Sorry, my dad just sent me a picture. I was making sure it wasn't an emergency. Whenever I get a phone call or a text message from my parents nowadays, there's always like, I have to get through, is this an emergency first? You know, my parents are in their 60s now, and you just never know. And I have grandparents in their 80s. So every call or text from a parent, you're just wondering, is this an emergency? Okay, no, it's not. Good, 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 good. I don't know what this picture my dad sent me is. I'll have to figure that out later. So if you're looking for some type of simulated Brandon Ayuk trade, how many? Let's go ahead. That's going to be number one. Let's count how many times I say trade, but accidentally say trade. Don't know why, but it is what it is. I think that report, quote unquote, is kind of in the ballpark of what the 49ers would need to be offered for Ayuk in order to even remotely consider it, which is someone in the mid to closer to 10 first rounder, you know, a mid first round pick somewhere in there, plus either a player or another pick or some type of pick swap. I think when I first reacted to this report from Mia O'Brien, it wasn't really a report. It was her kind of relaying kind of a scenario that she was talking. It was a little weird. I said, look, I would need more than that. If I was going to give up Ayuk, I would need more than number 17 and Zay Jones. Now, I believe it was Guy Haberman made the point about, he made a couple points that I'll bring up now, but this one almost seemed like, if the Jaguars are going to have to give up 17, then you better take Zay Jones off our hands and his salary, which is, I think I wanted to say right around 10 million. So it all, like, number 17 plus like some type of salary dump. No, thank you. Like, to me, number 17 is what Brandon Ayuk is worth. And there was no extra fluff. And I don't think the 49ers are in a position where they feel like they have to trade Brandon Ayuk. Like, yeah, there will be some finagling and there will be some cap crunching when the time comes when they do pay him, should they decide that. But I don't think they're at a point where they need to feel like number 17 overall is doing somebody else a favor. You know, you guys know my opinions on Brandon Ayuk and what I think he would be in an offense that passed the ball more often, and that's obviously might give Ayuk more of an incentive to want to be traded, you know. Thus the Pittsburgh Steelers rumored interest in Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk tweets to Mike Tomlin saying we look like twins. The first time Brandon Ayuk had tweeted in a while, and I should probably just start saying Brandon and or Ayuk instead of the whole name over and over. It's okay for a certain point, but at this point, Steelers have 20 overall. Now we're on the back half of the first round where I think that's not enough and they would need to add like a second or something like that, you know, a second rounder next year. And it's just, and if that's too much for them, then okay, well, we'll keep our top tier receiver and that's fine. And unless the 49ers have deemed other players more important than Ayuk and they feel like getting rid of him for something valuable now is essential to kind of the long-term health on the team, which would be tough to believe because in the end, like, you know, hold on. I'll move to that point in a little bit. But one of the other thing that Haberman brought up was the timing of things. A lot of people were like, well, why would Brandon Ayuk's trade market be crazy right now when, you know, the draft's still a month out? And Haberman made the point, and it kind of pushed me to go research some trades, that the majority of the 49ers' major trades in the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch era, the majority of them have been in March, and we're still in March. So one, it could still happen. And two, the 49ers certainly aren't waiting for the draft. You know, Malik Collins trade, the Trey Lance move, DeForest Buckner, D Ford. If you want to go way back, I mean, it's not Kyle Shanahan era, but Anquan Boldin, those were all moves done in March. Trent Williams was a draft day trade. Plenty of in-season trades, obviously. Christian McCaffrey, Charles Omenihu, Emmanuel Sanders, and so on. So if anything, the 49ers made less draft day trades than in-season and or in March. So the timing isn't necessarily what would force the 49ers' hand at this point. I just don't think the 49ers like necessarily making draft day trades. It seems, if anything, they'd like to avoid it. Now, acquiring a player in exchange for picks, that's different. But dealing a player and gaining picks and maneuvering around the draft board using players, it would seem harder to plan for. Like the 49ers have already laid out their draft board. These are our picks. These are the moves we can make with the picks we have. And then all of a sudden you're throwing a player into the mix. Now that's a scenario they've undoubtedly planned for, but it just hasn't really seemed like it's been the 49ers MO so far. What's cool is on Spotrac, they have NFL transactions. You can set it to 49ers and you can set it to trades and hit update, and it'll give you every trade the 49ers had made, like ever. It's pretty sweet. You go down, there's just not a lot of examples of the 49ers dealing players in April, because you can look at all the dates. April 30th. Nope, it shows the draft trades, the pick trades, the move maneuvering on draft day. You know, it also shows what I like about this tracker too, is it also shows here are the picks the 49ers traded to move to this position, and here are the players that team took with those picks. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. They haven't updated the Trey Lance trade, but whatever. So the point being, where am I going with all this? One, I don't think the timing is necessarily influencing the Brandon Ayuk trade. I don't think that if it were going to happen, it would need to happen in March. I don't think it needs to happen in April as we get closer to the draft. I don't think either of those are influencing the trade. I don't think the 49ers want to trade Ayuk. I don't think the 49ers are in any hurry to trade Ayuk. The one thing that doesn't get talked about enough is that, I mean, there's probably no team out there that wants Brandon Ayuk more than the San Francisco 49ers. We've talked extensively about the impact of Ayuk on the 49ers offense. The very simplistic way that I've always put it to you guys, and you can subscribe to it or not, is Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel are sort of, and even George Kittle when you think about it, although he does make some bigger plays, are sort of responsible for everything between like -5 yards, line of scrimmage, and +5 yards. Deebo Samuel's made plenty. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Deebo Samuel doesn't make any intermediate catches or deep catches, but he's obviously known more for taking short plays and breaking two or three tackles and making them into long plays. Brandon Ayuk is the 49ers intermediate to deep player. He gives the 49ers offense that okay, let's not pull our safeties up. You know, I know that they're running the ball on us. I know that Deebo Samuel just took that slant for 20 yards, but they've got Brandon Ayuk, and so we can't do that. Brandon Ayuk also is extremely reliable in terms of a route running. He gets open. He's Brock Purdy's far and away favorite target. In Purdy's first full season as a starter, Ayuk has his break. I mean, it wasn't his breakout season because he was good last year, but far and away his best season. It just seems very bad business to have stumbled upon this seventh round quarterback in Purdy, and then one of your first moves to build up the team around him is to deal away his number one target. You know, and that's kind of what I always fall back on. It's like, look, draft capital's cool. Trades are cool. The salary cap sucks to move around. It can get tough. But the one thing you wouldn't want to do in this situation is remove Purdy's just number one go-to. And then you've got the whole element of how Kyle Shanahan has helped build Ayuk up into what he is. And that has come with some tough times. You know, the whole doghouse era where Ayuk seemed like there were games where Ayuk didn't even get like a single target. But that's changed and he's evolved. And now you can find endless clips of Ayuk blocking his ass off 20, 30 yards downfield. That's not common in receivers. I'm not going to say it's uncommon. You know, there are receivers that absolutely take pride in the run game, but it's valuable. We'll just say that. Ayuk is so well-rounded. He's got great hands. He runs great routes. He's explosive. He makes big plays. He scores points. He blocks his ass off. He's a player that you want to find a way to keep on the team. And then when you add that to just what he means to Purdy. And, you know, when it comes to the money part of things, the one thing people don't necessarily realize is there's an ebb and flow to the salary cap. Like, yes, Ayuk's numbers would, you know, one, the 49ers could save money this year in reducing Ayuk's $14 million cap number from his fifth year option. But as well as you got to look at the contracts that, you know, they're like, well, how can we pay Ayuk now and have all these other big contracts and then pay Purdy? Well, some of those other big contracts are going to go, you know, and that's just the way the NFL is. At one point, Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Now he's not even on the team anymore. And shit just changes. I mean, look at the 49ers' biggest contracts and just tell me how long that you think they're going to be on the team. Let's go to, we'll just do this season. Trent Williams, you know, maybe they got one more year of Trent after this season. Maybe 2025 is his swan song. Maybe it's 2026. The 49ers aren't going to have any problem paying that, but there will be an end to Trent Williams' $30 to $40 million cap number. And that's a ton of space. That's almost what Purdy's cap number is going to be for the first few years. You know, next season, 2025, the second biggest contract is Deebo Samuel. If they were to just straight up cut him, they'd lose $15 million and they'd save $9 million, which is stomachable. It's not great. But if you click that little button that turns his release into a post-June 1, no, it's not changing. Okay, there we go. Got it. They lose $6 million and they save $17.5 million with a post-June 1 release for Deebo Samuel next year. So, I mean, I'm not saying cut Deebo, but I'm very much saying that if this season doesn't go, you know, how he doesn't prove his worth, which he has a tendency to do, you could very easily see them moving on from that contract and player, and that is a massive sum of money. You know, that's just the reality of things. So Trent Williams, he might retire. Deebo Samuel could be cut. They also could keep him. I'm just talking about how easily money becomes available. George Kittle, you know, we'll see where he goes. In 2025, his contract is worth $22 million. You know, and the 49ers, just from a straight up release of George Kittle. Now, again, not saying they're going to do that. It's George freaking Kittle. They've done restructures on his contract that would kind of insinuate that they want him around for a while. But they would lose $7 million and they'd save $15 million. That's post-June 1, you know. So you got to understand post-June 1 stuff, too, is it doesn't free up the salary cap until June 1st when you weren't really going to use it. So it's useful. It's not useful. If they did it as a pre-June 1, it would be a $20 million dead cap hit. And that is what it looks like when you restructure contracts. Every time you restructure contracts, that person's position on the roster becomes more safe for the time being. You know, that's just how it is. So my point being here, and even look, like, okay, the one I did want to look at that I wrote down here is Javon Hargrave. And I'd need kind of like a cap expert to kind of march me through this, but just in 2025, if you do a post June 1 release, Javon Hargrave is do $7 million, and it saves $20.7 million. So, I mean, that is a massive out for Javon Hargrave. If they felt like, you know, maybe his skills have declined, he's not necessarily a player that they feel like they have to have on the roster anymore. So, again, I'm not advocating the 49ers do anything here other than talking about the fact that a lot is being made of what they'd have to pay Ayuk. It would be a lot, but that money comes and goes. The salary cap goes up and players come and go. So it's not like the 49ers have already said they like to plan 3 years out. So on the money side of things, the 49ers can afford to pay Ayuk. On the schematic, on the team sort of things, he's not necessarily a player you want to let go. There are quite a few players on the offense and on the team in general that I would play with in terms of trading away or releasing before Brandon Ayuk, because he just adds such an explosive element to the offense. And sure, maybe you get lucky. Let's say that Jaguars trade were magically to come to fruition, and maybe the 49ers hit the nail on the head with the 17th pick and they get a receiver to replace Ayuk. That's when you've won the trade. You know, you've traded the player and you use the pick if they choose to do that. That doesn't always happen. You don't always use the pick to replace the player. But if they were to do that and the receiver ends up being good, then you're great. You've golden. You've taken a $25+ million a year player and you've turned him into like a $5 million a year player. And there's obviously going to be some development there where this player might not be as effective as Ayuk right away, but maybe in year two he's getting close, and year three he's right where Ayuk is. And that's how you save money. That's how you win. You know, that's how you win trades, is to not only get good value in the trade, but to draft a good player, you know, heaven forbid. So that's, you know, that's kind of my thoughts on the Ayuk trade. One, none of this, kind of just to sum it up, none of the rumors, weird things I've seen going around seem odd. It's typical, this player's on the last year of his contract and is a star type shit. That you hear it every year from multiple teams. This star is in the last year of his contract. Here's the teams he fits with. These teams are interested. This is what this trade could look like. Oh, he re-signed with that team. Never mind. Like, and you know, the trades happen too. I mean, Brian Burns was just traded, and that is one of the absolute elite pass rushers in the NFL. So it definitely happens. But where do we go from here? I mean, the 49ers are going to want Ayuk to play on his fifth-year option. It's $14 million. It's not cheap, but it's also, there's no long-term stability there. Ayuk's not going to want to play, but in the end, the 49ers have the leverage, because if Ayuk doesn't want to show up, there's fine after fine after fine after fine. But at the same time, the 49ers need Ayuk. Purdy needs Ayuk. He wants to go through an offseason with Ayuk. And, you know, that usually drives action in some way or another. Deals get done. Players hold in. Players hold out. Debo's done it. Bosa's done it. And eventually something gets worked out. I just think that if the 49ers do pay Ayuk, it's not necessarily going to have the long-term ripple effects that a lot of people think, because some of these big contracts are going to come and go, despite what they do with Ayuk. You know, it's just the way things work. Players decline, contracts become less valuable, contracts become more expendable. It's just the way it is. So I wouldn't get spun up about any of the Ayuk stuff. This is all business as usual for a player in the last year, entering the last year of his deal and on the fifth-year option. If I had to guess, I think the 49ers probably try and push the limits in terms of, let's see if we can get Ayuk to play on the fifth-year option. He's not going to want to do it. He's going to stop showing up to off-season stuff. And the two sides are going to work out a deal that actually saves the team money in the short run. And then his contract value picks up, you know, as the years go. And that's how it works. And that's how the shit works. All right, before we get into free agent expectations, I need to talk to you about Prize Picks. We mentioned it earlier. Daily fantasy sports. Made easy. It's you against the numbers. You're not betting against other players. You're not competing with other players, pros, sharks. It's you and you alone. More than or less than 2 to 6 players. Watch the winnings roll in. I know it's not NFL season, but it's March Madness. It's all on PrizePicks. You're watching it. You might as well be betting on it. You've got college basketball, you've got women's college basketball, you've got NBA, you've got soccer, you've got League of Legends, you've got baseball, you've got tennis. It's all on there. It's all on there. Be a part of it. PrizePicks.com/gold is where you're going to go, and you're going to use the promo code gold, and they're going to do a first deposit match of up to $100. What I've always loved about PrizePicks, you've heard me say it over and over, it's just so simple. It's easy to use. There are a few things more frustrating than technology not working as you know it's intended. This is not a PrizePicks thing. It's just so easy. I've never had any fumbles with it. You guys know my thoughts. You can set a lineup in 60 seconds. And again, that's prizepicks.com/gold. And you're going to use the promo code gold, and they're going to match your first deposit of up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made so easy. All right. Free agent expectations. Let's wrap this bad boy up. Free agent expectations. Kind of just starting in no particular order, in my own order. First, and kind of like their splashiest. And I know we talked about this in one of the last pods. I don't know what a less than splash is. You know, like we were joking about it. Katie and I were joking about it. I can't remember the words we were coming up with. But it was funny. I'm not even going to get into it again because I'm still stumbling on what word could possibly represent like a less than splash. I'm trying to like scroll up our text conversation to where we were at and we were joking about it, but like I can't get to it fast enough. And that's okay. I should have had it prepared. So Leonard Floyd, expectations. I got to try and keep reminding myself that that's why we're here. What are the expectations? Now, Floyd is a little bit of not a question mark in terms of what he does well. Leonard Floyd rushes the passer. He has an excellent motor. He is essentially a double-digit sack player over the last four seasons. 10.5, 9.5, 9, 10.5. You know, average, what is that? 9. That's 10, 9.5. 10. Yeah, it's average of 10 sacks. So he's very productive. He's the most productive player that the 49ers have put across from Nick Bosa. He's a high motor guy. He impacts plays. Even if he's not, you know, even if he's not putting it on the stat sheet, he's an impact guy. You know, he's flushing players out. He's cleaning plays up. He's the player you want opposite Bosa, because there's a chance that Bosa is going to flush somebody out and you want somebody with a high motor like Leonard Floyd that's going to finish the deal. Sometimes you'll read online like, oh, well, you know, a lot of the sacks that he got were cleanup plays. I don't give a shish. It's when you don't have a cleanup guy that sucks. Like, it's when players have been flushed out and there's no one there to seal the deal. So you obviously want a guy that's going to win his one-on-ones. But if somebody else wins their one-on-ones, you want a guy that's going to be there to finish it off. And that's what Leonard Floyd does. That's part of his game. And to me, that fits very well in with what the 49ers are doing. I expect Leonard Floyd to have a pretty big impact. Now, is he an every down player or is he a obvious passing situation player? That's a bit less clear. He's not bad against the run. So the 49ers could theoretically roll out, you know, Leonard Floyd, Malik Collins, Javon Hargrave, and Nick Bosa. And it's not bad. I still, every scenario I run through where, or every lineup I put onto the field for the 49ers based on the personnel they have, it ends up, what's the best way to say this? I end up being wondering how the, I don't know why I struggle to say that so much. I end up wondering how the 49ers are going to stop the run. And there is a bit of give and take when it comes to the defensive line's duty on like the wide nine, where the benefit of that alignment and the way the 49ers play it is it's less thinking, it's more going, you have your gap, get in there and penetrate and get upfield. But obviously we saw last season, the 49ers have begun to be pretty susceptible against the run. Was that a Steve Wilks thing? Was it not a Steve Wilks thing? Do the 49ers need some giant run stuffer up front? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I know that if the 49ers are going to be bad against the run, it's not going to be Leonard Floyd's fault, because he's actually pretty against the run, pretty good against the run. And it plays into his effort deal. You know, that's part of his brand, is his effort. So my expectations for Leonard Floyd are to maintain his double-digit sack prowess. I think he probably lands somewhere between 9 and 11 sacks for the 49ers. He's, again, the best pass rusher the 49ers have put opposite Nick Bosa. He's just going to be another player that will be consistently mentioned on the broadcast as he makes plays. And I'm interested to see what kind of effect he has and what kind of effect Chris Kocurek has on him, what kind of effect the 49ers defense and defensive line and Nick Bosa have on Floyd's game. Yeah, Floyd's getting younger. He's not getting younger. If he is, that's fucking awesome. Good for him, man. I don't know what he's taking. But he's not getting any younger is what I meant to say. But at the same time, he's playing with a coach that is known for getting the best out of players. So I'm not necessarily expecting a loss in productivity for Floyd. So I think that that's a solid free agent signing. Not a lot of negativity towards it. There aren't a lot of weaknesses to it. I'm just wondering if he's going to be he wasn't an every down player in Buffalo, and that made him more efficient. Will he be an every down player with the 49ers? Will they rotate him out with one of the players we'll talk about later? Is he just part of a kind of a group that rotates onto the field? I think that he'll probably play somewhere between like 55 and 70% of the snaps. It's just my guess. But in terms of expectations and what I think you guys should expect is just a player who's constantly making plays, whether it's batting a pass, making a play against the run, or pressuring the quarterback, getting him on the move, or getting him onto the ground. I think he'll have a pretty consistent presence on the 49ers defense. And I think also random, but I think he's going to look good in a 49ers uniform. He's not like the other 49ers defensive linemen. He's real tall, long arms. Looks kind of like an outside linebacker. He's played that role. And it'll be cool to watch what he does. I think I'm excited to watch him play. Next, I've got Malik Collins, who the 49ers traded from the Texans for a 7th round pick. This one's a little different for me. You know, I like it. I'm not inferring that I don't like it, but I'm just not expecting. Even more so than Leonard Floyd, I'm just not sure what role he's going to play, how many snaps he's going to get. You know, it's because he's a much better pass rusher than he is a run stopper. Much better. Much better. And the 49ers kind of already had a player like that in Javon Hargrave. Javon Hargrave is a much better pass rusher than he is a run stopper. So, you know, I think it's a good signing. He's a good player. I'm just wondering if he's what they need. You replace a guy like Armstead, and I don't think Armstead is going to be replaced by one player. I think that Malik Collins kind of offers you the pass rushing ability that Eric Armstead had, because he was good in that regard as well. But they haven't really added anybody that offers you the run-stopping ability of Eric Armstead. You know, let's say, you know, is he your second D-tackle across from Hargrave on rundowns? Or are you bringing in one of the other guys that they've signed that we're going to talk about? Does he come off the field? Does Floyd come off the field? Do they stay on? Are they, you know, it's just tough to envision his role. And maybe I'm downplaying his effectiveness against the run. Maybe in Chris Kocurek's defensive line and the way they play him and the way, you know, Nick Sorensen's going to run this defense, maybe they're going to take his skill set and make it work for them. But up until this point, he's very clearly been much better as a pass rusher than he is against the run. So is he out there on first down? Or is he just out there on second and longs and third and longs, third and mediums? I don't know. But to me, when you look at the 49ers defensive line, there's not necessarily a run stopper on the group that I could see, you know, replacing him. So maybe the 49ers are just kind of hoping that both he and Hargrave can form a good tandem on the interior and do a bit better against me, overperform against the run, I guess you could say. But we'll see. And there's also the chance that the 49ers are taking hard looks at defensive linemen in the draft. I know that that's not everybody's favorite first round pick, but I mean, one of the absolute best defensive players in the draft is Byron Murphy out of Texas, who's just an absolute tank of a defensive lineman. He's a 3-down guy. He's a good run defender. He's a, and in the mock drafts, I mean, let me just, I'll pull one up right now. Let's go. NFL mock draft. Let's see where Byron Murphy goes. This is CBS. I mean, we can go with that one just to see if I'm surprised here. So we're in, okay, Byron Murphy. I'm in pick 10. He has not been picked yet. At pick 15, he has not been taken yet. Okay, there he goes. He went 18th to the Bengals. That would, I'd say, is just slightly out of reach of kind of like a trade up. But I've seen him go like in the 20s, not too far from the 49ers draft position. And that could mean absolutely nothing. But I could see the 49ers looking at him and just being tempted into another defensive lineman. Let me see. I'm on Chad Reuter's NFL mock draft now. Let's see where he has Byron Murphy going. I'm in 18 and he is not gone yet. 20, 22. He goes 25th to the Bills, just six picks ahead of the 49ers. Now watch some Byron Murphy. The only reason I'm talking about him is he's super good. He's a very good defensive lineman. And it wouldn't surprise me if the 49ers were like, all right, if this guy starts to slip to us, we get him. He's our three down guy. We're rotating Hargrave. We're rotating Collins in to spell Byron Murphy or to spell Hargrave. You know what I mean? Like there is we'll have to talk about, you know, the needs of or the priority with that pick. But it would not surprise me in the slightest if on draft day, if by a player like Byron Murphy, he is Pro Football Focus's ninth best player. And I consistently see him mocked like 15 to 25, I'll just call it. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if the 49ers are taking a long, hard look at Byron Murphy and where he falls. Let me do one more. This is the Ringers. Byron Murphy. Where does it say? Okay, right there. We're just playing around here. Byron Murphy. He went 17th to the Jags. Okay, so it's, you know, mid to late first round and a lot of mocks. But anyways, I'm digressing a little bit. So what are my expectations from Malik Collins? Kind of like Javon Hargraves. I would say kind of like Javon Hargraves 2023. Let me pull up his stats real quick here. Javon Hargrave last year for the 49ers played 16 games. Good for him. He had 7 sacks, 44 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 14 quarterback hits. I would say somewhere around, maybe a tick less than that, maybe a 5 to 6 sack guy, you know, consistently moving the pocket a bit, probably somebody who's going to pair pretty well with Javon Hargrave. Like if you've got two guys next to each other that are both good at creating pressure, maybe that formulates into still being okay against the run because you're penetrating from two different points of the interior. I don't know, but I'm just trying to put it together. All right, let's keep it going. Defensive end, Yeter Gross-Matos. Now, he's a solid player. Again, we talked about his contract. It was reported to be pretty big. It seems like more of like a one-year deal. And if he plays well, then they're almost like getting him at a discount next year. Let me see if I can pull it up again. Okay, because if you look at it, in his first year, his cap number is $3.2 million. He's getting paid a $1.1 million base salary. And in the second year, that base salary jumps up to $7.3 million. For the most part, it's fully guaranteed. If they did a post-June 1 release, they would save almost the entire, you know, they would only lose 1.6 and they'd save 8. So I know talking about cap numbers on a podcast just doesn't. So anyways, again, if you look at his contract, it seems more like a one-year deal. None of his salary is guaranteed in his second-year deal. That doesn't mean that he won't have a cap number and an impact and dead money. But his deal looks more like a pretty cheap one-year. And if he plays well in his second year, then he gets a pretty significant boost. That would make him kind of like a deal, I guess you could say. So Gross-Matos, how he fits in, what are my expectations for him? A versatile dude. I think that he's going to rotate in with Leonard Floyd. If Leonard Floyd is not an every down player, if he comes off the field during early downs, you know, plays where there's a high chance of a run, I think it's Gross Models that rotates in with him. He's a big dude that's not far from Eric Armstead's size. 6'5", 265 pounds. Got used to playing an outside linebacker role with the Panthers. Could really easily play like a defensive end and bump inside. There could be a pass rushing group where it's like, and again, Malik Collins is a pretty solid pass rusher, but just for fun, you know, it could be Leonard Floyd, Yetur Gross-Matos, Javon Hargrave, and Nick Bosa, you know, a group that's just a little bit more athletic. And so I see Gross-Matos bouncing around a lot. I see him playing defensive end. Chris Kocurek loves to put like athletic defensive linemen in the middle, players that can get after the pass rusher. Gross-Matos is in terms of Pro Football Focus, he was decent in pass rushing, 65. He was decent against the run, 66, 65 overall. He had 4.5 sacks. He had 10 quarterback hits, 7 tackles for loss, played a lot of outside linebacker. So again, I think he's a player that he's the Charles Omenihu. Who's the one from the Raiders? 49ers, Raiders, pass rusher. Come on. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Arden Key. Let's go. Didn't take me too long. So, you know, Arden Key comes to the 49ers, gets a big deal afterwards. Charles Omenihu comes to the 49ers, gets a big deal afterwards. This kind of strikes me as that type of player. What a lot of people don't understand when it comes to signing players, scouting players, deciding, and I'm not saying that every move works out. Of course it doesn't. But there's a reason the 49ers signed a player like Yetur Gross-Matos. And a lot of it ties into scouts. And one more thing, that people don't realize is there are entire scouting departments that do nothing but watch players already in the NFL, players that are impending, that are becoming free agents, players that aren't becoming free agents, players that might be worth trading for, players that, you know, are 1 or 2 years away from the end of their deal, players who could be available, players who, you know, they're called director of pro personnel, scouting pro personnel. They're in the pro personnel department. All they do is scout players already in the NFL. This to me reminds me of something where, and what they are also charged with doing is having intimate conversations with the coaching staff and finding out what type of player Chris Kocurek wants on his defensive line. You have a good front office when scouts work with coaches, work closely with coaches so that they can get those coaches the players that they want. You know, there has to be some give and take. My little brother just texted me. He wants to FaceTime me real quick. Currently recording a pod. What should be done in about 15. All right. So I'm sorry you guys had to hear that, but hey, it's my little brother, man. I'm not making him wait just because I'm recording a podcast. I love you guys. All right. So in summary, the Yetur Gross-Matos signing looks like Chris Kocurek was talking to scouts and was like, I like this guy. I like his athleticism. I like his personality. Gross-Matos has a pretty incredible story. I think he's lost both of his parents and he's kind of working through that. And don't quote me on that, but I know he's got a tough backstory. And maybe he sees him and he's like, I can get more out of him. And I feel like that's what this is. I feel like this is that next Chris Kocurek player that he's going to move around. He's going to use his athleticism. He's going to use his size. He's going to put him in positions where he can exploit a matchup. He's going to be on a defensive line with Leonard Floyd, Nick Bosa, Javon Hargrave. There is a way in which you could use him that could prove advantageous for him. And it wouldn't surprise me at all. My expectations, I think he sees the field probably more than a lot of people realize, maybe around 50%, 40 to 50% of the snaps. He's rushing the passer. He's stopping the run from the exterior, from the end of the line. He's rotating on the inside. I think that he's going to have a pretty interesting season. He's not necessarily somebody I would peg for a breakout player, no less, but I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. I think a lot of people just kind of focused on the contract numbers and they're like, what have these guys done? What has this guy done to deserve that? And if you look at the contract, it kind of says, we're intrigued. Here's a year with a decent salary. And if you do what we think you're going to do, then what you're going to get paid in year two will seem like a deal for us, even though it's a massive raise for him. All right, let's keep going. Former Packers linebacker Devondre Campbell. Look, I know he was all pro in 2021. He's dealt with a lot of injuries that have kind of sapped him of a lot of his effectiveness. He's still a decent signing for what the 49ers are going to need him to be. He's not going to be a 100 sack guy or 100 sack. Let's go. Like, holy shit, pay him all the money. 100 tackle guy, which tackles aren't always the biggest indicator of success. Anyways, somebody has to tackle somebody, even if they're 10 yards, 15 yards downfield. But he's good for what they signed him to do. He's going to fill in for Greenlaw if Greenlaw misses time, which there's still, you know, I know that there's been, I've talked about it. There's been articles saying that Greenlaw could miss no time. He could be back in early September and be ready to roll. But I would guess that he's at least going to miss three or four games. And Devondre Campbell is an ideal replacement for Greenlaw in that span. You don't want him being your second linebacker for too long. He's not good in coverage. He's okay against the run. His missed tackle rate has started to incline. Started to increase, I guess we could go with. So he's a solid player. He's a veteran player. He's somebody you don't mind filling in a pinch. He has missed some games due to injuries, so you're hoping that he's not injured while replacing Dre Greenlaw, because then you're relying on your younger players and D Winners and Jalen Graham. I expect him to play a significant role in the defense, especially early on. We'll be hearing his name a lot, whether that's good or bad. And then I think that impact will teeter off as Greenlaw makes his return, but nothing's for sure. Dre Greenlaw is coming off a torn Achilles. You know, what's he going to look like? Is he going to have that, you know, pep in his step that we're used to seeing from him? And can Devondre Campbell just provide you a little bit of a cushion for his recovery? Yes. Is it going to look like Fred Warner or Dre Greenlaw? No. But they didn't sign him for Fred Warner or Dre Greenlaw money. You know, it's like he's going to provide the 49ers a little bit of a safety net. And hopefully they don't have to rely on him too long. He's okay against the run. His coverage is not ideal. And but again, maybe, you know, he had some things to say about how he was being used on the Packers defense. He had some things to say about the way he exited the Packers. Maybe the 49ers kind of get a different player that's being utilized different. You know, there's a chance. Let's keep going. Jordan Elliott, former Browns defensive tackle, Jordan Elliott. This one, I mean, more of a rotational piece. He improved. He hasn't been great. He's been like in terms of PFF grades, he's been in the 40s since like he entered the NFL, which is not good. But he improved a little bit under Jim Schwartz, Browns defensive coordinator last year. He was a part of the 49ers really limiting, or the Browns really limiting the 49ers when they played during the regular season. I don't think he's going to be leaned upon as an impact player. He's just going to be a rotational defensive tackle, you know, spelling Javon Hargrave, spelling Malik Collins, you know, maybe even spelling Yeter Gross-Manos, depending on where they were going to put him. Not necessarily a big time player, you know, but he was one of the earlier free agents the 49ers signed. And I think his role, just his general impact, is being a little overstated. I haven't really looked at the ins and outs of his contract. I know it was reported as kind of like a 2-year, $10 million deal, but in terms of impact and just kind of guessing where that's going to fall, I don't think it's that big of a deal. So I'm looking, last I looked, they didn't have his contract up here yet. So I'm kind of looking to see if that's still the case. I know, silence, not good podcasting. Okay, here we go. So not a lot to say about Jordan Elliott. He hasn't been good for the Browns since he was drafted. Maybe he'll benefit from the scenario. Next is former Saints cornerback Isaac Yiadom. Now, in terms of Pro Football Focus, he had a coverage grade of 80, which is like in the top 15 to 20 of corners, which is really, really good. He's really good in press coverage. He's he could be a surprise here. Now, again, I said this last week. The 49ers play a lot of zone. I don't know if they're going to be willing to kind of mold their defense to fit Yadam. I don't know if Yadam's expected to have that sort of an impact. I think he's going to be there to compete and give the 49ers a solid option. Let's say if they don't draft someone to play out there, we don't know where they're going to use Diamador Lenore. Are they going to ask him to play nickel, or are they going to ask him to play outside? In that case, the 49ers need a nickel, and that's not Yadam's game. So if they really like Isaac Yadam, I don't know how the 49ers think of him. Maybe they consider him a starter. Maybe he's going to compete opposite Charvarius Ward, and that's where a surprise could happen. If Yadam really ends up earning a starting role and holding it down like he did for the Saints last season, he spent time on teams, he's been a backup, and he finally got in last year and played really, really well. And so it'll be interesting to see where he lands. He could be just a backup that never sees the field, or he could surprise in the offseason and all of a sudden be a contention to start opposite Ward, and Lenore moves in, and all of a sudden the 49ers have this cornerback group that's actually pretty solid. Maybe Yadam's success last year was a flash in the pan. Kyle Posey tweeted a bunch of cool Yadam stats, just talking about how good he was in coverage when he was given his opportunity last year. It's in terms of expectations of that's, I know what this is all about. I don't know, to be honest. Like, and I'm not even embarrassed to say that. Like, how could I know? What are my expectations for him? I just don't know. I don't know where he's going to fall in the spectrum of just a backup or competing for a starting role. If he's playing as well as he did last season for the Saints and finds a way to fit with what the 49ers want to do on defense, then damn, expectations should be high. But at the same time, I don't think they signed him to a big contract. You know, I'm looking for his numbers on here. I'm not sure if they've been added. Again, silence while I look at salary cap stuff that I should have already looked at. But we'll see. We'll see. Nope, it's still all zeros down here. Yadam's down here. Leonard Floyd's numbers are still down here. Just not quite updated yet. So it'll be interesting. That's one to just keep an eye out for. That's all I'm going to give you. Expectations, they're all over the place for me. I'm not sure, but just keep an eye out on that name. Quarterback Josh Dobbs. What are my expectations for him based on the contract? They gave him like $2.2 million guaranteed. I think he's the favorite to land the backup role, and given his skill set, kind of mirrors Purdy a little bit. He's mobile. He's a little more athletic than Purdy, and in the fact, like, if he were to take off running down the field, I think if you're to race, I think Josh Dobbs is winning. But I mean, obviously Purdy's proven that he can go running down the field too. But I think Dobbs' skill set and his acumen to kind of absorb the playbook may give him the edge to be the backup. That said, Brandon Allen's been in the system. He's got his own edge. Should be an interesting competition. I'm not going to talk about it much. I'm done talking about 49ers quarterbacks, as I'm sure you're done listening to them. But I think he's kind of the front runner for the backup role. I think his skill set fits well as Purdy's backup. And I think he's a dude that'll fit well in the locker room and fit well in the quarterback room, as opposed to, like, you know, the Zach Wilson rumors. I'm like, nah, there's no chance, no way. There is a chance, but he just would seem like such a rough fit. I did have guard John Feliciano in here. That was a re-signing, you know, just a huge re-signing in my opinion. He's going to step in and be the favorite to start at right guard. And yes, he could be upgraded upon, but he was really good. He was solid in pass production. He was one of the absolute best run blocking guards in the NFL last year. And so that's a big, I expect him to be the starter, and I expect him to maybe even have a slightly better season building upon, you know, the cohesion with the offensive line that he would have built. Some of the other free agent signings, you've got former Cardinals linebacker Ezekiel Turner, special teams. You've got Chase Lucas from the Lions, special teams. You've got offensive tackle Brandon Carter from the Raiders, you know, backup swing tackle-ish. They re-signed Chris Conley, wide receiver. Made some plays in the playoffs, but absolutely showed up on special teams. You know, that's where I think he's going to continue to shine. Re-signed Kevin Givens. He's going to be rotational defensive lineman. Demetrius Flanagan Fowles will probably kind of compete a little bit with Devondre Campbell, maybe, to be that third linebacker, to maybe jump into the starting lineup. Because if Dre Greenlaw is missing time, you're going to have Devondre Campbell out there, and you're going to need one more, and that could be Flanagan Fowles. They re-signed safety George Odom to a two-year deal. Like, that's your leader on special teams and a solid backup at safety if an injury were to happen again. So that's it. Those are my expectations. I don't think I'm expecting any player to necessarily jump out as this massive, you know, out of nowhere, where do the 49ers find this guy, Chris Kocurek rules the world type of thing. But it seems like a solid group of players that are all going to have, like, you know, rather than the 49ers signing one stud, they signed a few good guys, you know, and maybe that's how this adds up by the end of the season. Or maybe it doesn't. We'll just say that. I don't want to bring any negativity to this podcast. All right, everybody. I think that does it. I think that's it. This should be coming at you on a Monday morning. And if the 49ers give me a reason to podcast again this week, or if I just feel like there's a topic I can talk on, then I will, you know, I'm kind of like somewhere in between one to two podcasts a week right now during the boring parts, but we are going to get into April soon. And we do need to start talking about the draft, and we do need to start talking about what the hell the 49ers could do with that 31st pick, because a lot of options, and it'll be interesting. The draft kind of fell their way in terms of there being a lot of options available at that pick. All right. Leave us positive reviews on whatever app you're listening to. 5 stars. Show some love. Be a part of the Striking Gold fam. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to. Not a whole lot to talk about right now. Right now, I'm kind of just talking about like X-Men 97, which is incredible, by the way. Like, the first two episodes, awesome. I don't know if you ever watched the original X-Men cartoons, the X-Men animated series, which is on Disney Plus if you want to catch up. Don't necessarily have to watch it, though. It kind of just does a good job of picking up where it is. But yeah, X-Men 97 is freaking sweet. That's what I should have talked about in the beginning of the podcast. That's my off topic. Anyway, appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening to Striking Gold. Thank you for making this podcast what it is. Thank you for, being here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for lending me your ear. Again, might be back this week. I'm on spring break. Maybe I'll be sitting around and be like, let's get in the studio, record some Striking Gold. I love you guys. Thank you very much for another episode. I'm Rob. This is Striking Gold, brought to you by Prize Picks, and we are signing out.